From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Some say that every one he rolls, he grows another grey hair. And some say that as a baby, his very first word was interesting. But we only know him as Dice Man Mark. Now, some say that his man cave is haunted by ghosts of board game pasts, screaming, "I lost by 1 point again!" And some say his brain will actually explode if he doesn't have the opportunity to ruin one of Mark's jokes in every single episode.
I'm waiting.
But we know him as Dice Man Trent.
Hello!
Now, some say that he wasn't born, but rather constructed in a robotics factory. And that although he can win the first game, he never continues to win that game ever again. But otherwise, he's known as me. My name is Gar. And collectively, we are the Dice Men Cometh. It is episode 135. It is the 22nd of September. I would like to welcome you all to this episode. And Mark, what do we have on this week?
Well, Dice Man Robot Garth, we are going to talk about the long-anticipated, long-winded, Long Night, the expansion to Dead of Winter, because we played that lately. We're also going to talk about some other expansions. What makes a good expansion? What are some of the good expansions that have come out? And what are some of the not so good, perhaps? We're going to have another special, What We've Been Playing, where you, Garth, are going to tell us about three smaller games that you played recently. And to end the show, we're going to have a wrap-up on all the latest Kickstarters.
And lots more on the show where Too Nerdy Isn't Nerdy Enough, The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, putting the forks in the air with some classic Slayer.
Metal! That was Slayer with Jesus Saves, whereas we know Dice Man Leon spends.
Oh, that was great fun.
That was
horrible.
I was rocking the, what's it called when you do your finger in the other finger?
You were rocking
it
out with your socks
air
out, weren't you?
That's actually comes, Ronnie James Dio invented that. And of course, Ronnie James Dio,
balls to the wall.
That's Accept, and they're German. You have no idea what you're talking about.
Really?
Ronnie J, little Italian boy.
Is this your interview? Oh, sorry, your audition for like running a metal show instead of a board game?
Like Kerrang Rock Radio. Grew up in an Italian village. His grandmother used to make that sign to ward off the evil eye.
Ah, there you go.
Borrowed it, used it on stage.
Are you sure that Ronnie James Dio didn't do a Balls to the Wall that was later copied by that German band?
You know what? You can challenge me if you like. We can check Wikipedia.
Sure.
And this thing called the internet. If you want to challenge that, that's an entirely different matter.
Oh, look, I like to refer to myself Rickypedia.
Yes, the Mark Rickards-pedia.
Board games,
the only reason I remember this is because a friend of mine did have a Ronnie James Dio tape in the early 80s. And he refused to, he slept with it under his pillow and apparently had very bad dreams and had to put it outside of the house.
Right, right. This was a friend of a friend.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's
sort
right,
of
yeah,
one of those
not
urban
me
legends.
It wasn't, yeah, me, sure, yeah.
See if you can get Garth back in, because we are supposed to be talking board games and card games.
We are the Dice Men Cometh, Garth, on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And tonight we're going to talk about board games, card games, tabletop games, all sorts of games you can play while sitting around with friends or on the toilet, as you do play, Garth, on your iDevice.
Well, when you mention toilet, I have to come back.
We've been playing some games lately, Trent, including this one that you're about to talk about now.
That would be the Dead of Winter, The Long Night. You guys teased this expansively last week while I wasn't here. And look, in short, if you love the original Dead of Winter and you're thinking, do I need this or not? The answer is a resounding yes! Absolutely. This is more of what you love from that game and maybe even just a little bit too much. Now, for anybody who's maybe not familiar with the Dead of Winter board game, The Long Night is an update to the really only truly essential zombie survival game, and it's fair to say that there's a glut of them on the market. Garth, you don't agree. You've made a face.
Oh, I just really like City of Horror because City of Horror really taps into that the zombies are a problem, but your fellow survivors are the problem.
Yeah,
and that's what I really
like. That's what Dead of Winter does that as well with the betrayer mechanic, because it is a largely cooperative game. In fact, it is a game that can be played completely cooperatively if you want. So it's a lot more versatile because you can throw in the betrayal goal card, shuffle it up, and maybe it comes out, maybe it doesn't. I like to play with a slightly elevated chance of a betrayer as opposed to what's prescribed in the rules in terms of the odds. Just slightly increase it, ratchet up the tension there. I guess the strange thing about A Long Night is that it's not just an expansion to the game. It's essentially a new version of the game.
Standalone.
It's the same rule set, but with new characters, improved components, new Crossroads cards, and a couple of extra add-ons, but there's very little duplication from one set to the other.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about this very, very briefly last week, which was what our thoughts are going to be on whether or not there is a place for Dead of Winter anymore. Because with the Long Night expansion being a standalone game in itself, do you actually need the base game full stop? Because all it really is going to add is those characters and those Crossroad cards. Doesn't sound like much, except that they're the whole point of this game.
I think technically, no, you don't need to own the original version because this is standalone.
Correct.
But if you've already got the first one or you're doing it the other way around, either way, it's just going to be more of what you enjoy.
Exactly. And I think Leon said it really, really well last week, which was, what he looks for in expansion is more of what you already love and then some other things. And he specifically mentioned the module components of this, which is the Raxxon and the advancements
which we'll get to.
Look, I know as a long-time Dead of Winter player, there's some characters that I'm really attached to. The cook, I can't even remember what her real name is. I always call her Carol, like Carol from The Walking Dead.
Sure.
She cooks. Sparky the Wonder Dog, of course, the Sheriff, David Schwimmer lookalike sitting on a stone, you know.
And so, what about Mike Cho? Oh, everyone loves Mike Cho.
The ninja character.
Oh, yeah, and I think if you just played the expansion by itself, obviously you miss out on all those characters, and it just gives you a huge pool of characters to draw from.
With both sets. Yeah, and the characters continue to be drawn from the full breadth of modern society, which is great. There's plenty of angry-looking white men, to be sure, but there are many black characters, Hispanic characters, female characters. There's a trans character, and it's all done in a very... it's just not a big deal. It's just done in a really mature fashion.
A mature and realistic way, and that it shouldn't be a big
deal.
And
it's just something that it's so often overlooked by so many designers.
Yeah, really hats off to Plaid Hut for that one.
We did have an awkward moment, Garth, where two of our white male characters, as we were playing the game, had a chance to huddle together under a blanket through a cold night. And there was the suggestion on the Crossroads card, because the Crossroads card comes out every turn. It gives you a little sort of story element as the characters continue to fight through this zombie-infested post-apocalyptic winterscape. And it was a cold, long night, and there was this suggestion of intimacy there.
Was.
The card was written in such a way as to be completely gender neutral. It just happened to be two blokes in our in our situation. That wasn't awkward at all.
It wasn't, and the joy of that card was the decision-making process, because it was one of those thumbs up or thumbs down decisions that we had to make. And it wasn't, it was just the two of us who were there
had to make
that decision.
And I kicked your ass to the curb, baby.
You did.
You shouldn't flatter yourself.
Oh, look, I loved that card because, honestly, it made me really think about the decision I had to make, because the outcome was going to be, should both of us agreed, one of us would get the other character. And that was basically it, is that the person with the highest influence would be able to grab a character. If we both disagreed, nothing would happen. And then it also obviously took care of the, in a mixed result, this is what's going to happen. And thanks to you, Trent, there was that mixed result, which was that I got despair, i.e., I was heartbroken.
That is one new mechanic, the spare tokens. It basically counts as a wound, except it's much more difficult to get rid of. Of course, it makes the game harder. My favourite new elements in the Long Night are the bandits, who are little standees who come out to basically take up space on all the locations. They do nothing except annoy you. Oh, well, actually, that's not true. They also attract zombies.
Yes.
And then at the end of every turn, they steal stuff.
Oh, no!
But then the stuff they steal goes into a separate little pile on its own bandit hideout location, and you can raid that. And then, if you decide to exile a player, because maybe you don't trust them, maybe they're acting in a suspicious way, but it turns out that that person was not one of the aforementioned betrayers and was working with you the whole time.
It's not very well.
That person can become the king of the bandits.
Which is cool. I really like that mechanic.
I'm really surprised, though, that that's your favourite part. Really?
I just think it's such a simple idea, taking up the space in the available space in the locations and preventing survivors from getting in there is a wonderfully simple idea.
For me, the idea that I really like on top of that is the fact that you can go and raid their stockpile.
Yeah.
You can essentially go to their location, and rather than just spending one of your normal action die to automatically kill or what have you, you have to roll a die, and depending on the result, you can choose to, what is it?
Search or attack.
Yeah. And depending on the roll of the die, so complete luck, it's going to be what the outcome is, whether you get to search through the deck of cards of stuff that they've already stolen and add it to your hand, or are you going to take a wound, or potentially if you attack and roll, I think, a one, you just die.
Well, don't get me wrong, though, Trent. I really like that. But when I look at the other two modules, I just think they are brilliant. And look, I'm going to talk about the lesser of the one first.
Yep.
The improvements.
Oh, the improvements are fantastic.
And, you know, we've played two games with this now. In the first game, we really used the improvements. In the second game, we actually didn't even make any headway towards an improvement. And when we're talking about improvements, we're talking about things you can do to the colony to make it better. Classic things like, hey, let's build a machine gun turret, which basically lets you auto-kill one or two zombies every turn. Or let's get this DVD player and fix it up, and we can increase our morale every round, which is amazing. I think there's 10 different improvements.
Build a greenhouse so you can get a certain amount of food every turn. So this is actually a little part of the expansion that helps you.
I know, believe it or not.
Although you do have to build all of these things,
that's true, and
that's not always easy.
That's right. It is that dynamic tension where you've got these cards that you can use to do other stuff or burn them to add a number of advancements, and each improvement needs one or two or three or four advancement tokens before you can actually make it happen. You never have enough cards in this game in your hand. You're always trying to get more, and this gives you something else to use the cards on. So again, there is, as I said, is that dynamic tension of this would be really great, but I haven't got many cards.
And there are also characters that specifically add to that dynamic as well. And in the last game we played, my character had that explicit ability, which was once per round, when they're at the colony, you just add one of the tokens.
Yep. And you never did it once.
No.
Filthy betrayer.
No, well, I wasn't always there.
And poor us didn't pick up on that, did we, Garth?
There you
bastard.
Go.
The other major new component is the Raxxon Chemical Factory, which is a location that's full of all sorts of goodies to find and play with, including experimental drugs.
Yeah.
Then there are the new nasty zombies with special encounters and special powers that'll get released from Raxxon if players fail to place dice of a particular value onto a deck of cards at the Raxxon location. And what that's meant to represent is there's a computer code that you're supposed to punch in to this computer.
Yeah, keeping the containment field activated.
Right, right.
It's almost similar to cracking the safe in Burgle Brothers. You've got to sort of spend the right dice.
Except you're trying to keep
pips.
It closed to stop the special zombies from coming out. Now, in practice, I found that this turned into a bit of an annoying distraction, and it was made more annoying by the fact that, as you pointed out when we were playing, Mark, you're spending the whole game stopping one of the really interesting new elements from coming out and interacting with it.
Yeah, and I did reflect on that afterwards because, yes, there's that, but that item deck for Raxxon is amazing.
Yeah.
Protective barriers. What did you find?
I found the flare of Galadriel.
Yeah, like the stuff in there is really powerful.
Grenade launcher.
And again, it's that real dynamic tension of, I've only got three dice. Am I going to spend one or two to stop this super zombie from coming out? Or will I get this really good stuff?
The other thing I don't like about the Raxxon, the super zombies, is that I kind of feel like Dead of Winter was, yeah, sure, it's zombies, but it was based and grounded in a certain realism. No, I'm not. No, like
real zombies.
Well, yeah. No. Look, the same way Dead of Winter, the same way Walking Dead.
Yes.
Is, okay.
Yes.
But now there's these zombies with superpowers, yeah. Right? Which just kind of tips it over the edge for me.
Well, I think it was maybe Shut Up and Sit Down or someone else mentioned that the zombies could quite easily just be replaced with wolf packs or something like that, because the zombies themselves are really just a distraction. They just multiply and multiply unless you kill them. They take up spots. They cause you to not be able to go and access certain locations. But in themselves, they don't do anything particularly. So I get where you're coming from in that it takes it from zombies being just a bad distraction to actually being this, yeah, more sci-fi version of that, I guess.
So look, the Raxxon element aside, this is absolutely flawless.
Yeah.
I think there's only one small technical issue, which I'm still working through, and that is the search decks.
Not that one die that was sort of painted.
I think we got a special limited edition with a mutant die.
Oh, the 2.5 roll.
That's right.
A couple of pips mispainted on a die in the factory in China. Now, because you get a whole new set of search decks for each location with this expansion, you can't just put them all together because the ratios all work out wrong. And look, I'm not going to go into it right now, but you've got to cull each deck extensively if you actually want it to still play the way it did originally.
Yeah, well, look, I just want to say that Dead of Winter, the base game, is the number 9 thematic game of all time, according to BGG. So it is an incredibly highly regarded game. I think if you like the theme, which a lot of people do, it's a no-brainer. Just buy this. It adds more. If you haven't tried Dead of Winter, don't bother buying the base game. Get the new one with the Long Night.
Does this fall into the category of essential expansions?
Yes.
Mark?
Pretty much, maybe, possibly.
Well, it replaces the base game.
Yeah.
If you love one, you're going to love the other. Yeah. Get them both by all means if you really enjoy them. But it did get us thinking about expansions in general. And what are the ones that need to be in your collection?
You know what? We should come back after a break and talk about expansions.
Ooh, the shambolic sounds of Nicholas Allbrook, A Fool There Was, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I quite like that. I'd like it even better if you could sing. But I quite enjoyed that. Yes, Dice Man Cometh,
Trent,
is the name of the show.
That is us.
There.
We are them.
We've established that.
Yes.
Okay, good.
And now it's time to expand.
Oh, yes.
On expansions.
Boom.
Boom. So what?
I nearly said bazinga.
Oh, you would have had to leave the room.
I would have shot myself in the credibility right there.
Oh, dear. Look, expansions. What is it that makes a great one? And Garth, you actually alluded to something that Leon said the other week, that I had written down almost a very similar thing.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What's an expansion?
An expansion is a thing you buy, an extra bit that, from a publisher's perspective, extends the life of a game.
Oh, you mean a cynical money grab by a game publishing company?
Potentially, but what does it add from our perspective, from the players? Well, I look for two things in an expansion.
Mm-hmm. Solo playability?
No. Garth, I know I'm going to never live that down, but that's only Pathfinder. And that came with the base game anyway, okay?
Keep going.
So in my mind, a good expansion takes a great game and adds more variety in the greatness. Lets you do more of the same, keeps it fresh, lets you get more plays out of it, okay? The other thing that an expansion can do is it can add a whole new part to the game, but importantly, you need to feel like that new part fits.
Yeah.
So let me give you a classic example of both of those in the one game. One of your favourite games, Trent, Seven Wonders. So Seven Wonders Cities adds a whole bunch of new cards, changes it up a little bit because there are negative aspects, there's a few different tokens and things, but really it's just more of the same game and adds more variety in the general gameplay. Whereas Seven Wonders Leaders adds a whole new phase at the start of each round where you're drafting leaders, and the leaders then give you some direction as to what strategy you might follow.
And that's why you like Cities more than Leaders?
No, I love them both.
Really?
Because one does one thing and one does another, but together they really build the game into something that's just meatier.
There's been quite a few expansions for Seven Wonders now, and look, that's a whole other thing we could talk about, a series of expansions and where a game sort of jumps the shark with them. Leaders was the first one that came out for Seven Wonders. I think that's a fantastic expansion.
Yes.
Cities, I still play with using those cards, but it does take it, well, for starters, instead of getting seven cards, a la the name, you get eight. Right, which is the first sort of bit where it starts to break down for me.
Okay,
yeah, and then there's more beyond that with the Tower of Babel expansion.
Yeah, which I think is probably the point where it has jumped the shark.
But leaders,
I think,
to a lesser extent, Cities.
Yeah,
essential.
Okay. I will happily play that every single time with the Leaders expansion. I think it adds to the dynamics.
And look, I mean, some more examples of minor expansions which really can expand the gameplay. Something like Puerto Rico, where it's a real gamer's game, heavy game. People love to get in there and play it to death and build strategies around it.
And such a good game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and timeless. So you've got the Puerto Rico buildings, where you've got a new set of buildings that just add a little bit of variety, but make you have to sort of throw out that strategy that you think, I always take the corn, and then I always get this building, I always get this building. You've sort of got to start from scratch.
Have we played with those in the
games? No, we haven't.
Oh, okay.
I have played with them in the past, and I know I've played with them online. So they just really, they add that variety that can really extend the game life. And another example of that we've talked about recently is Agricola, where, you know, Agricola was the sort of game that people wanted to play again and again and again. They really get to know how the game works. They really develop a strategy that they'll do A, then B, then C. So you change up the deck in terms of, excuse me, the interactive deck, the gamer's deck, the expert deck, just to mix it up and keep you guessing.
You were saying that there's over 300 cards for
in one deck.
That's in one deck.
Correct. And then there's the basic deck, the interactive deck, the expert deck, the gamer's deck. There's at least six or seven decks.
This is where you also struggle, because there's so many games on the market. I mean, particularly for us, where we run a show talking about this stuff, so we're always trying to play new stuff. There just isn't the time to get through a deck of cards like that.
Yeah, and then we mentioned that there are these expansions that really are essential, and once they come out, you never want to play that game without. And look, for me, a classic example is Kingsburg.
Yeah, okay.
The Kingsburg expansion is called To Forge a Realm. And what it adds a number of modules, but one of the things it does, and that I love, is it enables you to make your starting board, where you're taking your actions, different to other people's starting board. So all of a sudden, it's not four people trying to do the same things, but maybe in different orders. It's the four people doing, or four or more, people doing different things in different orders that can change up the way you play the game.
Yeah, I agree that kind of expansion just makes a game so much more replayable. And for me, the immediate one I thought about was Suburbia Inc. for Suburbia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just the fact that it allows you to really develop your city in a unique way that is completely different to each of the other players, I think that is one of those expansions that once it gets into the box should never be taken out.
Yeah, and again, it's more of what you love plus a little bit more.
Yeah, correct.
In Suburbia Incorporated, it's those border cards, those long, chunky bits that slot in next to all your other
The only thing is, that's where the perfectionist in me just goes, I can't have that perfect hex space.
Okay, if you really want more of what you love and you enjoy a good space opera, Twilight Imperium 3 has one expansion, Shattered Empire, which many people consider the base game unplayable without it. Yes. Unplayable.
That's incredible.
Wouldn't go quite that far, but brand new strategy cards, new planets, new races. It adds two new players. Mm. There's also the Shards of the Throne expansion, which I think may be less essential. Still got some fun bits in it. Maybe at this point you're better off waiting for the inevitable Fantasy Flight Games reboot, which...
TI5 or whatever it's got to be.
I mean, look, seriously, this game came out in 2000 and whatever it was. It's going to be announced any day. You just know it's coming.
I don't know. I love sitting down and playing that game.
The new version of Twilight Imperium will be app driven. It'll be scenario driven.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're going to borrow elements from Descent and Star Wars and put them in there and make it infinitely expandable. Someone's working on that.
Of course they are.
That's just wild speculation on my part, but I think it's common sense.
Let's hope. Now, of course, for every great expansion, there is a expansion. And what came immediately to mind to me, and I'm so sad about this because it is one of my favourite games, Race for the Galaxy.
I knew you were going to bring this
you
up.
You could put in almost all the expansions. Yep.
No. The first one
was good.
The first one is needed.
To my mind, though, the sad part was that it really, what it reflected was, they released 2/3 of the game as the starting one and then added some bits to try and correct the balance where some strategies were fully formed, but others, like the alien cards, like the genes cards, weren't.
Race.
And you needed those extra, for example, the 6-point developments.
Yes.
You needed those. But, I mean, we've all been crying out for a great Race to the Galaxy expansion, and I just don't think there has been one. Look, if you want to talk Jump the Shark, let's talk Carcassonne the Catapult. Or, in fact, Carcassonne Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, what? Dear.
Like, these are crazy, crazy. What were they thinking? And, look, here's a controversial one. This has been a really popular expansion with a lot of people. Me, I hate it with a passion. Pandemic in the Lab.
Yeah, look, I think I'm on your side with this one.
It just adds more complexity where more complexity is not needed. Mm. And it's like a distraction happening off to the side, but it didn't need that distraction.
Well, I guess that brings up a bigger point, which is do expansion. I think Carcassonne is a great example of that as well. Do expansions just sometime make a game too crazy, too big? They lose the root of what the game is all about in the first place. And I think that's a really good example of that. Because on the flip side, especially about Carcassonne, I think you look at The River, which is a tiny little expansion of, a dozen cards or so. But I mentioned this in one of my iOS updates a week or two ago. Yeah. I can't remember not starting the game with the river tiles in a game now. So that, for me, is an invaluable expansion.
I think when you're designing a game, you have to start cutting the fingers off your baby pretty early in the piece, okay? And actually scaling it down, particularly if you're doing a Kickstarter, right? And you want to make it affordable to produce. You maybe don't want to make it too complicated. So you scale it down. So you start removing some of the elements that you originally wanted in there. You then get an opportunity to add them back in. You can design the base game with a view to always putting that in. But then maybe there are other times where, hey, you've got a surprise hit. Let's just sticky tape something onto the side, which maybe doesn't quite fit.
Well, I think
there's certainly a sweet spot that you need to aim for.
I think the fact that you can have a bazillion versions of Carcassonne and Carcassonne South Sea and Carcassonne something else and Carcassonne this, which is just the same thing with different artwork. It's just a real shame.
Let's before we get talking too long, let's just really quickly run through a bunch of other really good expansions.
Well,
that
I was
going to
say,
get.
If you want an example of a 12-fingered mutated baby, Stone Age style is the goal. Have you ever played that one? It was popular in Germany, and the name doesn't really translate well. Stone Age style is the goal, where you're building like necklaces and bits of bone and stuff, and there's this whole multiplier thing where the more bits of bone and necklaces you get, you can swap them. And it, again, just this lovely, simple game, not overly simple, but has simple mechanics, just gets complicated and globbed up and... I hate it.
Okay, another word of warning to anybody who's brand new to the board gaming hobby. Settlers of Catan is a game that does not improve with expansions.
No, it does not.
There is a perfectly fine base game right there. Leave it at that.
And I think that's where
spend your money on something else, right? Get a different title.
That's right. People go searching for, oh, well, we love this game. Let's make it bigger and more and better. Sometimes you're right. Sometimes you're better to move on to a new game. A couple that I think are really great, though. King of Tokyo, the power-up expansion.
Yep.
Where you're adding special abilities to your characters.
Good fun.
It makes them more individual. I love that. Dominion. Like, there's a baby that has 15 half-fingers.
Oh, the game is entirely expansions.
Yeah.
And like, Prosperity really changes it up and makes it really interesting. But so many of the others are just dull.
Garth, I wanted to ask you, I mean, you're a massive Cosmic Encounter fan.
I've written Cosmic
Encounter
down here.
How many expansions are out for
that? Yeah, there's five or six at least. And I have absolutely zero problem with having five or six of those expansions, because all it does is add more zany, more crazy abilities, and I love that. In a similar vein, and something we talked about not too long ago, I thought my little box expansion for Imperial Settlers was a beautiful addition, and as I said to Mark and to Carl when we were playing this game, it's never coming out of the box now. Yeah. I picked up another one today, and three is the magic number, so it'll be very... look, it'll be very good to add that and see whether or not it adds something as much as my previous expansion. I really enjoyed that. But
Machikoro?
Machikoro, look, I like the Harbour expansion. Millionaire's Row, I don't know whether it needed that at all. But something that I wanted to ask your guys' opinions of, speaking of Dead of Winter before, is whether or not Battlestar Galactica or Battlestar Galactica with Pegasus expansion. Because there's after that, there's so many other expansions. I don't think it needs it. But I've played it a lot with Pegasus. I really like that component in there. But I wanted to just see what you guys thought of that. Because for a lot of people, Dead of Winter's been the game that has replaced Battlestar Galactica.
And I'm in that camp. I'm not the person to ask.
Yeah, see, I've played both. I do really like Pegasus. I like the extra characters that it adds. I like the treachery cards. But I've never played with New Caprica, and I've never heard someone say a good thing about it. The Pegasus itself, I probably would always play with that.
There you
go. Just ups the variety a bit.
Yeah.
So there's a few expansions for you to avoid and a few to spend your money on, because here at the Dice Man, one thing we're bloody good at is recommending how other people spend their money. And we're going to keep doing that when Mark takes a bit of a gander at Kickstarter and what are the hot new board games. Well, it's not just board games you're talking about today, is it?
It's all sorts of stuff. There's some role-playing in there.
All right, if you feel like spending some money on crowdfunding, we'll talk about that next on the Dice Man Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Company by Thymaster, Edge Radio 99.3 FM, the Dice Man Cometh, and a hello to the northern half of Taswegia. We broadcast out of the Edge Radio Studios in Hobart every Thursday night. But I had cause to head north. Actually, earlier in the week for work, I was up in Smithton. Sorry, I'm mispronouncing it.
Dread.
And
good thing they don't have radio up there.
They can't hear us. There's no radio. There's barely any electricity. I was up there. I said, "Hey, where's a good restaurant to eat here while I'm here tonight?" They all said Stanley, which is the town half an hour down the road.
Right. Yep.
Anyway, but I did go through Burnie, and I want to say hello to Matt from Mind Games in Burnie.
Really?
Burnie has a Mind Games shop.
Wow.
Right? Mind Games, one of the bigger chains around Australia. Burnie's not a big town.
Fantastic. Oh, come on.
Well, it's not.
It's full of possibility. It's so, the city by the sea.
So the theme song keeps telling us. But I said to Matt, "Hey, it's great that you've got a shop." And he said the community was crying out for it, and he's doing really, really well.
Oh, fantastic.
He's selling the magic cards. He's selling the Games Workshop stuff as well. So he's got a bit of a mixed offering there, and just can't stock enough Settlers of Catan and Carcassonne.
Yeah,
of course. That's just keeping the show.
Hopefully, now that you've been there and he knows of us, hopefully he'll tell every one of us. They'll listen and pick up some of these amazing ideas for great new little games.
Exactly right. Now, I do actually believe that Dice Man Leon took advantage maybe a year or so ago of a D20 sale that Mind Games in Burnie had. And that where you roll the D20 and whatever number you roll is the percentage discount
so
you get.
A maximum of 20% discount.
Exactly right. Nice. So there you go.
Also passed through Launceston on the way home and dropped into the good games.
Yeah, that's there. A great store.
What an amazing setup they've got. And again, a mixed offering. They're also, they've got the board games. They're selling the trading cards. They're also selling comic books.
Yeah.
And they've got a whole LAN network and PS4s and things all set up in there. And it's all like polished concrete and stuff. Looks very, very cool. I just think it's a fantastic thing. And it just shows you the way the hobby's growing.
Absolutely.
In little old Tassie.
Yeah, it is. And it's fantastic. Now, are you talking about little old...
You've just had a complete sneezing explosion.
I have.
During that last song. So correct. Are you okay?
I'm okay at the moment. I may need to step out, but I'm doing all right. Now, what I wanted to talk about is a week or so ago, I had a day off work.
Hey! Nice.
But as did Leon and Sarah, because they work like 3 days a week and they don't have children, so they can get out whenever they want. So we arranged a little
hate Leon
public
and
house gathering where we agreed to maybe have a drink.
I really hate them.
Eat
I
like food.
Them. Lovely people.
Definitely play some games. So we all made a little agreement that we would bring some games that are small, that could be fatted or fitted. In your handbag or
purse,
they could be fatted in there.
Yeah.
So we all did that, and we ended up playing three little games over the course of maybe 2 hours. So I wanted to have a brief chat about those, because I wasn't lucky enough to be involved in the conversation that happened a little bit further ago about games you could put in your pocket. So I wanted to start with a game you were curious about and almost wanted to try a week or so ago called Last Front.
Yes.
The strategic card game, which... Trent, you'll be very happy to know, has a person not quite staring off in the front of the box. It's more about, I'm about to shoot you while I'm looking at the front of the box, because this is a World War II strategy card game, which is a deck of cards, about 160 of them, and you've got four, let's just call them suits of cards in there. You've got your basic ground troops, you've got your tanks, you've got your planes and your ships.
Garth, he's got a Thompson gun in his hand. That's awesome, box card.
Yeah, anyway. So the way this works is that apparently they define it as being a bit of a card game where it's the war of attrition, which doesn't automatically lend itself to be exciting and fun, because attrition is all about just wearing out the other players. So this game is essentially, you will get a hand of cards that is a random selection of the troop cards, which are numbered between, say, 1 and 5 strength. At the start of every round, you're going to flip over a card, and that's the territory you're playing for, be it the USA or Russia or China or Japan or whatever the case may be. And you basically make very simple decisions on your go. The first player has to either choose to withdraw and not partake in that battle, or they have to make sure that they are the current high bidder. And all the high bidder means is that you add up all your troop numbers, irrespective of what types of army and navy and what have you they are. And whoever's winning at the end of all of that is going to collect that territory. Now, in itself, ho-hum, the territory, though, does add in then a permanent game ability for your particular cards, which might say that I control the USA, therefore all the troop cards I play from now on are going to be a +1. So look, this game was okay.
Yeah.
The first game that we played, Sarah won this game by a very simple strategy that she let me and Leon just fight over this kind of redundant territory. We used up all our cards, and at the start of every turn, you just draw one. So we had one card left. Sarah had about 8 cards, and she just did a clean sweep there. So it wasn't a World War II experience in a box, I can guarantee you that.
That's really disappointing for me to hear, because I saw a friend of the show, Tony Menzies, who did the fantastic Others video with us and his great Others series. He did an unboxing of this, and I looked and thought, oh, this is a real thematic World War II. Could it be, you know, like the Grizzled in World War II?
No, it's not. No. So, look, I would suggest we play it so that we can say we've played it, but it's certainly not a game that I would feel is World War II in a box. Yeah, it does have a couple of little unique cards that offer special abilities and so-so, but it doesn't really make enough. Now, the other thing that I wanted to touch on, and this is really because it was a compare and contrast with the game that you have, Mark, which is not Dungeons of Mandom. What's the Western name of that?
Welcome to the dungeon.
Welcome to the dungeon.
We got fun and games.
That, I think, is the unsexiest thing I've ever seen. I'm so glad it's radio.
I agree. Put your top back on. But anyway, it's really a light filler dungeon crawl.
Yeah.
Now, I really enjoyed this game. It was, it's called Dark Dealings. Essentially, you are doing a drafting mechanic where you are drafting and collecting the weapons that you're going to be used. You then go around, the bad guys that you're going to fight, you then go and spend those bad guys to essentially auction for the good things you're going to get. That determines the order in which the bad guys you're going to face. It's essentially last man standing. Who can fight the most bad guys, get the most loot, wins. It's a really fun, light, simple game. Leon and Sarah have compared it to Boss Monster, which I've not played. I've got the app, but I've never bothered to open it. But it was a nice little bit of fun. And very quickly, we finally got a chance to play Eminent Domain Battlecruisers, which is kind of like Entropy in space in the Eminent Domain universe.
Just with the Eminent Domain theme pasted on.
Correct. Everyone only going to have 5 cards. You play a card. If someone else has played the same numbered card, you can't do your actions and there's occasionally a consequence. But if no one else has played that same number as you, you get to do an ability. First one to a certain number of points wins. It was nice. It was fun. It was a very tight mechanic.
All right, there you go. 3 games from Garth's man bag. And now, games to spend money on Kickstarter. Mark, what's hot?
Well, what is hot? Firstly, there's one great Australian game on Kickstarter this week. It's just launched yesterday by our good friends Grail Games, Donut Drive-Thru. Do not drive through without buying the donuts. They've had a great start. They're up to almost $7,000, I think, in the first 24 hours of funding.
Donut Drive-Thru.
Yeah. It's a great little donut-themed game. It's another one of these games where David Harding has gone off to the Tokyo Game Market or somewhere there in Asia, picked up this great little design and brought it into an English form.
Does it come in one of those little square boxes that they do?
It is. It's in the Mike line. It's number 7 in the Mike line.
They stack up so well on the shelf.
They're awesome. Brilliant little game. So check that one out. Not from Australia, but from our friends across the pond is Bethel Woods, a game by Shem Phillips, who we spoke to.
Yes. In fact, Shem Phillips is about to deliver his last Kickstarter, the Shipwrights, Raiders and Explorers of the North Sea trilogy from Garpil Games. That should actually be arriving at my house any day now.
I was going to say it should be right about now.
And can I just say, Shem, hats off to you, mate, because that man runs a bloody good Kickstarter. No fuss, smooth, no howls of protest. Over 2,000 backers around the world who've ordered multiple games and expansions, delivered on time.
Well, this one's called Bethel Woods. It's set in a fiction universe that I don't know, called The Hours, which is a sci-fi setting. Based on a story, but it's a miniatures game with a board, lots of art, moving around, sort of adventure style. But it's only got 6 days to go from today, which is Thursday, obviously, but it's already 150% funded, so it's definitely going to fund. Bethel Woods, if you want to check that one out, it's definitely worth a look.
And you know that you'll get it on time.
And look, not a game, but miniature holders. These are amazing little wooden handles.
Miniature holders.
To paint and sculpt miniatures.
So, what, as opposed to a lump of blue tack?
No, yes. These things are amazing. Beautifully carved wooden handles with cork, and then the miniature fits into the cork, and it has this little rail that you can rest your hand on while you're painting. Like, it doesn't sound much, but from my own practice of painting these miniatures, these things are bloody awkward.
Well, that's because you jitter a lot, Mark. But I think obviously, resident painter Aiden, this would be something that he would get a lot of benefit out of because he spends most of his days and most of his nights painting our miniatures.
Look, there is so much happening on Kickstarter. Another one at the moment is Thornwatch. Now, it's by Lone Shark Games in conjunction with Penny Arcade. So Lone Shark Games being Mike Salinka, the guy who came up with Pathfinder, a whole bunch of other games. Penny Arcade, obviously, they are an online webcomic. Thornwatch is one of the comics they have drawn about this sort of like grown-up Boy Scouts who go out in the wood adventuring and fighting monsters and stuff. And this is a role-playing game in a board game. Very card-driven, but it's got this board component. It has a judge and it has a players. It's hard to get across in the video what it actually is, but it really looks fascinating.
Okay. Now, this game is not cheap, though, from memory.
No, that's right. Look, the art in this is beautiful. So it's definitely worth checking it out. Tiny Epic Galaxies. We talked about an expansion. There's Tiny Epic Galaxies Beyond the Black. Check that one out. And look, the absolute amazing one for me, it's called Loaded Dice. It's glasses, as in drinking glasses. You've got one that's got 1 to 20 down the side. When your DM says roll for initiative, don't roll the die. You drink from your full glass, and whatever mark it gets to down the glass, that's what you roll. And they've got a shot glass that's a D4, a larger shot glass that's a D6, a schooner glass that's a D12.
Well,
how clever is that?
There's one way to guarantee rolling high.
Well, exactly right.
Every time. Look, it would be remiss of me not to mention the wrap-up of Invisible Sun.
Of course.
I've not heard of that one.
On Kickstarter, over $660,000 raised by about 1,800 people. It's the highest funded new RPG setting of all time.
Yeah, wow.
It's Monty Cook's biggest Kickstarter yet. It's been a fascinating campaign as well, with the key falls that were spread throughout it. You got particular bonuses depending on what day you happen to back it on. There were these hidden geocaches around the world, or both the States and the UK. There was an accompanying website with riddles and doors to open. It spontaneously birthed a whole community. And frankly, I kind of miss it now, because it's going to be a year until this game gets here. Anyway, that brings us to about the end of the show.
I've got a couple of other super quick ones. The End Is Nigh, a pre-apocalyptic deduction game. So you're in, it's like your social deduction games, but you're in the bunker, and it's, you don't have enough room in the bunker, of course. So who are you going to vote out?
You.
Never.
Oh, sorry.
And look, Aventuria, the adventure card game. Everyone knows I love a good adventure card game. This one looks great. It's got some great art.
Does it have solo play?
I don't even know. But look, it looks really promising. It looks like a fully fleshed out game, as opposed to a lot of these which start with an idea and they haven't really fleshed it out. This one does look fully fleshed. It's about to fund and it's still got 20 plus days to go. So check that one out.
All right, look, we got to go because we're the whole theme of tonight is to be quick. And we're going to actually try and be a little bit quicker about getting the podcast up, because we know we've been late and slow, which is primarily my fault. Thanks very much, everybody. We'll catch you next week on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.